back with episode 522 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have... And all I can say is, you know, frozen dinners, frozen potatoes, frozen vegetables. Disney, you're getting out of control with all of this counter and excessive advertising for frozen.
Indeed. I'm just waiting for the Jolly Green Giant.
That's right. And did I hear somebody else jumping in?
Yeah, I know. With all this talk about, you know, the Disney properties, John, you should just let it go. You know, really, it just you're obsessed.
Yes.
You probably take everybody's, you know, everything somebody says is, you know, related to Frozen.
Perhaps. All right, well, before we run that into the ground as much as Disney has over the last year, we're going to be turning our attention to the plethora of news that has come out from the Television Critics Association winter preview or conference or whatever they call it, press tour. That's what it's officially called. But we're having a slow week this week, so we're going to just be very informal and I'm not really caring whether or not I get terminology right. Ha! I think they're called spoilers, though. Those are the things we need to worry about. And if these are news articles about what the press tour is revealing, I'm guessing there's going to be a lot of those. So, Edmund, I think we need to give a disclaimer before I run this anymore into the ground.
Absolutely. For those of you who have not been following avidly the TCA press releases, we're going to spoil you horribly about them and possibly about some of the episodes that we may or may not be talking about this episode or certainly next. So you've been warned, but as we've been noticing, there really hasn't been much to watch, so you really should be caught up anyway.
Yeah, now would be a really good time to catch up on really anything, because next week we're not going to be able to say that. Not even close. All right. Well, as perhaps we get a little bit started here, Gary, why don't you go ahead and take the first article here about CBS?
Absolutely. CBS, you know, growing up, used to always be the lowest network. You know, has been pulling up great numbers in a lot of shows, and some of the more recent freshman drama shows that they've pulled up are being renewed. And not surprisingly, I watch a few of them. We're talking about NCIS New Orleans with Scott Bakula, yay, as well as Madam Secretary and Scorpion. They've all three of these new shows have been renewed for year two. Hooray for making the cut! They've been pulling really good numbers. Anything pretty much with NCIS really usually pulls good numbers anyway, and thankfully this is following in that tradition, and it's, you know, it's pulling up, I believe it's the number two behind the parent show. For so NCIS New Orleans is doing well, as and then Madam Secretary with Tierra Leone is doing great numbers as well. I think they're averaging over almost 15 million viewers a week, so those are really good numbers, especially compared to some of our cable shows that we watch that barely, break 3 or 4 million. So that's, they're doing really well. And finally, following up is also Scorpion, which is the number three show of the season, is still pulling in close to 14 million. So, you know, big, strong numbers from these shows. They're doing it and doing it well, at least for the shows I watch. I know I watch NCIS New Orleans occasionally, as well as Madam Secretary regularly. And they're both really decent shows. They aren't quite what I expected when I first heard them announced, and I'm glad because that means they're good. I was expecting some pretty bad stuff, but they're turning around. Anybody watch Scorpion Among Us? Or
I can't say that I do. How about you, Edmund?
No, I'm afraid. I just wound up never picking it up among all the other stuff we watch.
Well, don't worry. There's 14 other million people watching it for us. But regardless, again, great numbers. So all three of them get renewed, and. You know, that's good. I wish there was a little bit more science fiction in that mix, but all things said and done, Madam Secretary in particular has turned to be a nice drama, and without trying to sound too sexist, it's not as girly as I expected it to be. So if that was any of your impressions, you might want to give it a second look.
Okay, well, let's see. Edmund, why don't you take the next one?
Extraordinary avalanche of renewal news that we got from the CW. They have picked up 8 of their current seasons to announce renewals for. In terms of what we follow here, that includes Arrow coming back for season 4. Not a huge surprise there. The Flash is returning for season 2. The 100 will be returning for season 3. Originals and The Vampire Diaries, its parent show, both returning. Rain has been picked up for season 3, Jane the Virgin, which has probably been their biggest new show hit, and of course a surprise Golden Globe winner for some, now picked up for season 2, and that old stalwart perennial Supernatural will be back for season 11.
There are some shocking things in there, not the least of which the echo that, of course, Google is providing for us at the moment. But at any rate, the thing that surprises me is that Rain got a third season. I didn't see that happening at all. And Jane the Virgin, despite the fact that it's gotten a lot of critical acclaim, has, from what I understand, not been getting very good ratings. So I don't know if this is an example of the CW kind of letting critical buzz drive decisions or what. But wow, Supernatural, 11 seasons. Wow.
They're going to give The Simpsons a run for their money pretty soon.
Yeah. Yeah, Jensen and Jared are going to be, like, elderly by the time that this is over and done with. You know, there's going to be, like, entire generations that were, like, when I was a kid and Supernatural started. But anyway. Yeah, I mean, this is amazing to me that they came out with so many shows coming back. It's actually quite good to see. Obviously, very happy about Arrow and The Flash. I personally feel like maybe the time has come for The Vampire Diaries to bow out, but maybe they can come back and get a little more credibility. Rain is an okay show. I enjoy what I see of it, but to be honest, it's not as on the same level, at least as far as I feel, as say a Supernatural or Arrow is. And certainly Arrow right now is the crown jewel of the network as far as ratings are concerned, at least as far as I recall. But at any rate, that's not the only news about the CW, because there are still some mid-season shows to premiere, and probably the most high-profile one is the new series iZombie, based, I believe, on a comic book from DC, I think it is.
I believe you're right.
Yes, and that's coming Tuesday, March 17th, which will be pushing Supernatural back to Wednesdays, because I think Supernatural has been on pretty much every night of the CW schedule throughout its long run. And then also, I guess this is going to be roughly around the time that The 100 concludes its second season, which now that The 100 has been renewed for season 3, again, another very welcome piece of information. I'm not so worried about the fact that they have a shorter season. I'm actually glad. There is a mid-season, it's just that kind of night. Mid-season show called The Messengers. It's an apocalyptic new drama. When a mysterious object plummets to Earth, a blinding explosion it causes sends out a shockwave that instantly connects 5 strangers who awaken after the pulse with extraordinary gifts they can barely believe. So this apparently is kind of apocalyptic revelation type stuff, and it will be beginning on April 10th on Friday night. I think that J. Michael Straczynski might want to have a word with them about the similarity to Sense8, but there we are. We'll see whether or not that show can match the 100 in terms of really hitting that mid-season note and getting some viewers. Hopefully it will be more like the 100 and less like Starcrossed. But we'll see.
Or Dominion from that other network.
Yes, indeed. Is there room on the CW for more than one angel? We'll find out, I suppose. All right, Edmund, I think you have the next one, yes?
Certainly. It was also finally revealed when Mad Men will be returning for its final 7 episodes, and our long wait will end on Sunday, April 5th, at standard time, 10 o'clock. And presumably, imagine they are going to run them out without too much interruption. So yes, that would put us around the end of May, the traditional end of the TV season, for the finale of Mad Men.
All right. What do you think about that? You guys anticipating the end?
My feeling is this is the case. This is the case more like BSG, sadly, than Breaking Bad, where the luster has gone off the show enough to where I'm haven't really been waiting with bated breath, and the idea of stringing it out this long is just sort of making it feel like a decline into the end. But I can always keep my fingers crossed that maybe they'll surprise us and come out with one of those final returns to form that we have sometimes seen in recent years.
I vaguely recall the first half of the season not being particularly bad. Maybe bland for a few episodes there, but it did pick up towards the end with Bert's death, as I recall.
Yes. Well, yeah, but, I mean, Don was such a... They've damaged him so significantly throughout the course of the first half of this season that, you know, you feel pity for the man in a way that... But you don't even feel like he deserves it. But you, just being human, you do. But, no, I felt they were going... they were going to such a dark place with Don. I never had a sense of redemption for him, and I, you know, given the show credits that always run at the beginning, you have to wonder if they're actually prophetic or not, because they sure seem to be going to that point. So we'll have to see. But I agree, it's been way too long, and I'm not sure how they. I guess they get higher advertised rates for. Oh, if people are going to tune back to watch the last six episodes, I have to look at the ratings numbers afterwards, because I have to imagine this damages the audience. You have to lose casual viewers when you go over a year. I just can't believe they come back.
Yeah, especially now these days. I mean, the spring is so packed with mid-season shows and these shows that have been split and come back. And I mean, just we're getting just hammered starting next week. And that's only about half the shows, or you know, maybe 60% of what's going to be coming in the spring. And it's become very, very packed. And I can't imagine, like you said, how people may already feel a sense of closure for the show because of the decision to do this. So, yeah, I mean, obviously we'll be there till the end. And who knows, this may be wind up being, you know, Edmund, we may be surprised that this could turn out to be the kind of ending that, say, a Burn Notice gave us versus Warehouse 13.
We can only hope
because literally that's all we have left. Hope. Anyway. Let's see. Am I up next or... Sorry, I was...
No, I believe I am.
No, you're up. Yes, you are.
Yes, and this gets me really excited. The writer of Gareth Edwards' Star Wars spinoff departs to write Miller's Starlight. While we don't know what this standalone Star Wars film, just to recap really quickly, besides the main trilogy of the next batch of movies, there are going to be side movies. We've heard rumors of young Han Solo. We've heard rumors of Boba Fett. And so nobody's quite sure of what spinoff that Mr. Edwards has written. However, what we do know is that he's going over to write Mark Millar's Starlight comic book series. For people who aren't familiar with it, imagine Flash Gordon, you know, saved the princess's planet, and then went home and had a family and, you know, grew old and had kids and, you know, life went on, but he had this sort of special memory and he never really bothered to tell anybody because they figured he was crazy and he didn't want to get locked up. So then, you know, then he gets this call back about 40 years later to go, that the planet needs help once more. And so it's, while it does bear a visual resemblance to early Flash Gordon, I'm thinking like Buster Cobb, I think is the name, Buster Crab, more so than the Queen Spectacular. It still holds that sort of sense that, you know, what happens after the first story? You know, you're not quite as young, you're not quite as fast or strong, but, you know, you still want the drive to help people and to do good and to beat the villain is still there. And how do you do it? I'm not saying... When I say he's older, he's probably a senior citizen, but by no means is he an invalid. So, you know, he does go about things, and I don't want to give the story away, but it's really enjoyable. If you like that Flash Gordon pulp, you'll certainly love it. And even for somebody with more modern sensibilities, it does cast a lot more realism on situations like that. So I'm curious to see what twists and turns Mr. Edwards will take now that Mark Millar's finished his first major arc with the comic book series. So.
Yeah, I've read through, I believe, the first four or five. I'm a little bit behind, but I do like where the story's going. So it'll be interesting to see, like you said, how much this film or adaptation covers.
Well, you know, it's interesting because George Lucas always puts Flash Gordon in movies, those serial movies, as sort of his inspiration for Star Wars and the genre in general. And so, here you get a comic book series that is in many ways doing that exact same thing. And so it's interesting to see that sort of overlap and see if this Lucas's Star Wars sensibilities will carry through this this writer through, and we'll see those same sort of sensibilities in the comic books.
Yeah. Speaking of things that were once old and are new again, we have more information about the casting of the Twin Peaks quote-unquote reboot, which is not really a reboot, more of a very, very long after-the-fact continuation. And Kyle MacLachlan will in fact be coming back to reprise his role as Agent Cooper. Not only that, but since this article came out, Cheryl Lee has announced she'll be coming back as Laura Palmer in some way, shape, or form.
Now you're just teasing the 90s version of me. Come on.
No, Dana Ashbrook will be coming back as Bobby. And Sherilyn Fenn could be coming back, it's still not clear on here, as Audrey Horne. And yes, basically a huge chunk of the cast, at least, is starting to – the ones who are still alive, I should say, it has been 25 years are coming back for this. And of course, as anyone knows, you know, there's a lot of people who are like, well, how is that going to work? It's 25 years later. This is Twin Peaks, folks.
Jeez.
Of all shows, this is the one that could most easily bring back anyone on the cast, really. So I'm just excited because, again, this is shaping up to be either a massively unpredictable continuation of something so long after the fact, or quite possibly the biggest train wreck in the history of cult television. And either way, it's going to be wondrously entertaining. So,
I'm hoping for pie myself.
Exactly. All right, let's see. Edmund, if you could take the next one.
Certainly. We have some Hannibal casting news. They have found their tooth fairy. Richard Armitage will be joining the cast as Francis Dolarhyde. And I must admit, I must give the writer of the article props for the opening line where he did manage to avoid the preposition and tells us that Richard Armitage has found a role into which he can really sink his teeth. But I think this is a case where you really have to go with he found a role he can sink his teeth into. Regardless, it is, I think, fine news, wonderful actor playing an iconic role, just gives us even more reason to savor the return of Hannibal, even if it may have been delayed slightly in the recent NBC announcements, but we'll be coming back this summer.
That's right, that's right. And I'm sure that everyone here will be hearing all about how excellent it is going to be, because Bronstum is probably already salivating while cursing the name of NBC. There are some people who are cursing the continued news about this adaptation, live action, of Ghost in the Shell. Not only have they secured the casting of Scarlett Johansson, but now they have secured a release date of, at least for now, the 14th of April, 2017. So, of course, as everybody knows, this is Johansson playing the title role of Major Kusanagi, or some kind of westernized version, and android, or not really an android so much as a completely artificial intelligence or body with a human mind. I guess you could call that an android, they do in the show. Anyway, it's all at anime. We know that it gets a little more complicated than that. But yeah, I'm at least looking forward to it. But you can see this picture at the top of the article. And again, I think there's two reasons why Scarlett Johansson was cast here. Her stoicism and her athleticism. That's exactly what you were thinking, right?
Yes.
Right? Okay, good. I'm glad we're all on the same page here, guys. All right, Gary.
Yes, we're talking about a newly announced sci-fi series. Now, calm down. It actually sounds like it might have promise. So don't jump on the torches and the pitchforks just yet. Announced for this year, they're going to have what they're calling a futuristic prison drama called 51st State. As this show unfolds, the United States, confronting a growing prison population stretched past its limit, buys the country of Greenland and converts it into a frontier prison colony with males and female convicts. If they move to Greenland, they are promised freedom. And so, you know, a lot of people want to go do it, but, you know, can they handle it on their own in this crazy, you know, frontier? A lot of people have likened it to the real-life history of Australia. Sorry, Bronson. And And I'm not sure how exactly science fiction gets involved in this, other than being set somewhat in the future. But we'll have to see on this anyway. They haven't announced how many episodes are being run yet, but they are using the term series, so I guess it's run until the ratings give out, or I guess that's 7 episodes nowadays. So we'll have to see. But yeah, it doesn't have any large. There's no reference about any long-range contract signed, so I suppose it'll, be on its own. It is co-written, however, by an Oscar-nominated writer from the Dallas Buyers Club. If we can transpose genres, I suppose.
That's quite a transposition, yeah. I'm guessing it's futuristic because, to your point, the whole Australian thing, maybe it's far enough into the future that global warming has turned Greenland into the new Australia. Just maybe. I don't know.
Possibly.
We'll see.
I'm also thinking that now that Helix has abandoned the Arctic and is in the rainforest, they had a whole bunch of Arctic wardrobe they needed to reuse.
That might be it. Speaking of returning things. This one I'm not sure if I would call welcome entirely, but Edmund, take it anyway.
Certainly. Going back to the CW, they have announced that Charlotte Ross will be returning to Arrow as Felicity's mom in an upcoming episode. And that is about all that has been let out at this point, other than presumably this will be letting us in on a little more of Felicity's backstory, since that's something all of us are interested in, and we will have to see how.
Not to mention more Felicity screen time.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the inevitable Felicity spin-off, just because everything on Arrow is potentially getting a spin-off, apparently. But anyway, I'm going to move on to the next one here. Speaking of spin-offs, this was a spin-off of Doctor Who, at least in the modern era. But yeah, Torchwood found its unfortunate demise following the miniseries that was Miracle Day.
Can I pretend it didn't exist?
Yes, but it's been off the air, but it looks like it may be making a comeback of sorts. John Barrowman is saying that Torchwood will be coming back as a series of BBC radio plays. It's an interesting direction for it to go, considering the fact that both the BBC and Big Finish have their own lines of Doctor Who audio dramas that go out on, disc and digital download. Why this would go on the radio, I'm not sure, but more Torchwood? What do you guys think? Is it a good idea, or should they just let this lie fallow and maybe bring Captain Jack back into the parent show?
Positive if it was Big Finish rather than BBC, but I mean, reading between the lines in the article, I mean, it does seem that certainly in terms of any on-camera stuff, Barrowman's saying he's full-time with Arrow now, so certainly doing something audio where it can basically be, as we know, recorded anywhere in the world and then send in. That certainly sounds like the way to go. That's more likely to bring it back in a timely fashion.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably give it a listen once it's released over here in some form or another,
Well,
legitimately or otherwise.
I think Miracle Day left such a bad taste in so many people's mouths that this might be one of the few ways to try and, sort of get it back into the, popular culture again. So I actually applaud them for doing somewhat unconventional and moving it to radio. So.
Yeah. I mean, it is at least something. And I do like the idea of John Barrowman saying that he might write one with his sister, because as I recall, I don't know if I'm pretty sure it was his sister that he co-wrote a Torchwood novel with, and that it from what I've heard, it's one of the best of the novel line. So we'll see how it goes. Gary, speaking of unexpected directions for some casting here, I only included this not because of the main topic, but because of some of the names that I saw attached to it.
Oh yeah, I, to be honest, this had fallen under my radar, and I'm still not quite. I still don't quite have a good feeling of what the show is going to do. But regardless, it's the title of the show is "Wet Hot American Summer," and it's adding Josh Charles, John Slattery, and just as to I'm saying, they're adding these people. They're also adding, Randall Park, Lake Bell, Paul Scheer, and Richard Schiff. But hold on, when I say adding, they already have in this show. Elizabeth Banks, Bradley Cooper, Amy Poehler, Paul Rudd, H. John Benjamin, Janine Garofalo, who else? Christopher Maloney. I mean, they have so many people in this thing already. And then when you hear adding and you still know the names, no offense to many starting out actors.
This is like the party down of Netflix.
Yeah. Well, you know, this, we're living currently through the tipping point, and it's one of those tipping points that's nice because you see it and you see it happening, and it's, it's thankfully more exciting than scary, but at least for us, since we're not in the television industry, but we're seeing this shift now where you're going from network television to, first we were going to cable and we thought that was the shift, but now we have this whole, internet non-studio, non-network type of productions starting up from, Netflix, Hulu and the like, and, they're not tied to the television model at all. I'm curious how they handle ratings, and that'll be interesting to see how that sort of shakes out for advertising over the years. But, I mean, it's here. I mean, you look at, shows like, House of Cards and things like that, and all these different, internet-only TV series are really, they're doing a good job. They're not the cable access TV kind of jokes or the ones that are all green screen or, just super low budget. They're putting a lot of money and they're getting bankable names into these different shows to do this. And, this is an example of people just piling on to a good thing. So, I mean, it's sort of encouraging that even Hollywood is jumping in so wholeheartedly, and you're not just a few pioneers at this point, but, everybody. So it's going to look good, and who knows? Maybe this will be the year I cut my cable. We'll see.
If nothing else, it sounds like it's going to give a lot of people more options. If all these actors are going to this show on Netflix, then there are other roles that other people can maybe get now. talking about casting and people moving to unexpected shows, perhaps, Edmund, if you don't mind.
Certainly. We've also gotten some casting news for Salem, its new season, starting up in April. They have cast Lucy Lawless, will be coming in to play Countess Marburg, a German witch who is one of the last of her kind in an ancient bloodline, of course. And Stuart Townsend, I'm glad to see that starring in 13 has not killed his career, he will be playing an English aristocrat named Samuel Wainwright, who is a doctor who wants to expose Salem's dark secrets while keeping his own hidden, of course. They also have Joe Doyle and Oliver Bell coming in as new series regulars as sons to one of the series' established cast, which seems a little odd that we wouldn't have met them in the first season, but then again, with people coming back from wars or being off overseas and things, there's certainly plenty of opportunity for people to show up unexpectedly, even if they're direct family.
Still, the main character, the one that they show in all of the previews, is the draw for me, but that's because they've changed up so many other things, and there has to be something that remains solid, right? Again, casting, Gary.
Yes, we're talking about, again, more CW news coming out. Dexter alumni are going to be cast as Flash's other trickster. We've already heard the news, of course, that Mark Hamill is going to reprise his role as the trickster on Flash, but also former Dexter actor Devon Gray is also going to be portrayed as a younger version of the trickster. So I'm not sure where the break is. Are we going to have perhaps this is going to be our flash forward in time that we've been getting hinted at that might happen. So we'll have to see. Gray is joining other alumni such as Wentworth Miller and Liam I can never say that name right. McIntyre, rather well-named villains on the series. So it really sounds like whoever is doing the casting is really pulling up some great people. So it's been one of my favorite show on the CW. So and it looks like it will continue to be so.
Yes. Well, I'm just surprised that they are really casting about beyond Prison Break and what was the other show that everybody seemed to come from?
Spartacus.
That was Arrow, wasn't it? But anyway, whatever the case, they are mining an awful lot of other shows for their casting, and I'm perfectly fine with that. Now, this is interesting casting news, and not unexpected for some of us. The Walking Dead is adding a new series regular. Now, look, guys, we talked about spoiler warnings. We're really getting into spoiler territory here. If you don't want to know, don't listen. So there is an actor called Ross Marquand, who is going to be joining the series sometime in the second half of the fifth season, and probably into the sixth season, should he survive. And he is being touted as the first prominent gay character for the show. All I can say is anyone who is at all versed in the source material can probably figure out who this could be. And this seems to continue the evidence that the community, shall we say, is on the horizon. So I'm actually looking forward to where they go with that. All right, so Gary, I think there's actually another casting announcement that you accidentally skipped over.
Oh, yes. Yes, why did it have to be this casting announcement? Anyway, John Rhys Davies is joining the new MTV fantasy series, Shannara. I was not aware of the MTV doing the series. However, it is based on the Terry Brooks books of the same name. It's set in our world. It's a post-apocalyptic tale, although be it several thousand years after our society destroys itself. And it tells the story about the Shannara family, whose descendants have magic and have to reshape the future of our world. The first season is going to be based on the book The Elfstones of Shannara, which was actually the second title in the series. So I guess they want to dive right into the action and skip all the world building.
Well, I mean, I think we talked about this at one point before. I've only read sporadically in this series, but the very first book, Sword of Shannara, was widely kind of dismissed as almost a ripoff of Lord of the Rings. And really, even Terry Brooks kind of later said that, yeah, he was kind of starting in a very similar place and then veering off in another direction with the second book of the original trilogy, which is this Elfstones of Shannara. He keeps kind of jumping around in the timeline, because I've actually gone all the way back to the earliest books of the series, which are set in more or less present day, before the apocalypse that takes place. And it's interesting that those books that I read were books that he wrote many years after he started this whole thing. So he's really liked to jump around all over the timeline, kind of as, you know, others have done with their series. But
And it's interesting that Rhys Davies wanted to shy away from science fiction, that he, you know, I can recall several different interviews where he, you know, talks about it being he really puts down the whole genre, and he sort of says he was fed up with it, but I guess it pays well. So he's coming back.
If he plays a dwarf, I'm going to laugh hysterically. But anyway. Edmund, if you could take the next one, please.
Certainly. This is the news that from Suicide Squad that Tom Hardy has dropped out of David Ayer's film, and which did seem to have its casting all set. No details on why, and there is no definitive word on who will replace him, but the name being bandied about is Jake Gyllenhaal. So, yes, going from one top name to another top name, maybe.
Yeah, and I heard some kind of background information on this that came to light afterwards, and apparently the cast of the film had been contracted before they even saw a script, because this always ends well. And when the first or the most complete draft came out, the role that Tom Hardy was supposed to play had been overshadowed somewhat by Deadshot and the Joker. Which, if you look at who's playing them, maybe that explains a few things about the casting. But what's not surprising to me is that he's leaving, because I vaguely recall that my first comment upon the release of the cast was, what is Tom Hardy doing in this movie? I guess he eventually came to the same conclusion. let's see here. Taking a bit of a divergence from the endless casting announcements, we have Sci-Fi yet again coming out with some new material, this time a six-hour miniseries based on Robert Charles Wilson's Hugo Award-winning novel Spin. And James Ulls, who I guess was attached to Fight Club, Semper Fi, and Jumper, has been signed on to adapt the novel for the miniseries. This novel centers on a young scientist trying to save humanity from the impending apocalypse of a mysterious, impenetrable cloud that has enveloped the entire Earth, blacking out the stars. I think we saw that on an episode of the original Star Trek. It's just a big paramecium, I'm telling you. Maybe not. All right. But the interesting thing here is that Spin is the first book of a trilogy. So if this does well, perhaps there will be more.
Well, you know,
there we are. I was going to say, sci-fi is once again going to actual literary sci-fi for its inspiration.
And, you know, they talked about this, you know, and we were sort of doubting their veracity, whether or not they would actually, you know, carry through and actually do it. But, you know, from all these news releases that we're getting, yeah, I mean, they're taking a variety of reasonably hard science fiction and trying to adapt them. So all I have to say is, for all those people who, you know, complained about wrestling on sci-fi, they're doing science fiction, guys. At least give it a chance, give it a shot. You know, tune in and try and watch it. Watch it live if you can, but if not, just, you know, try and watch it. You've been wanting them to put science fiction. They can't run Star Trek 24 hours a day, for crying out loud, like they used to. So just go ahead and, you know, give this a shot. You know, give their science fiction, you know, it's due, and appreciate that they are sticking their neck out. They could easily go to, and no offense meant to any friends, they can always go to those crazy movies of the week again nonstop, and, you know, a lot of people didn't care for those, at least not on a regular basis. We wanted good storytelling, and hopefully this will be it. So, you know, go out and support them.
I completely agree, Gary, and I was a little disheartened when I saw that, I guess I didn't put it here on our news list, but they had released the trailer for the series The Expanse, which again is a show that Sci-Fi is putting out that is based on literary sci-fi, and people were just ripping into the trailer and nitpicking it. I mean, really just coming up with little split-second things in the trailer just defined as a criticism. And at what point do you just start judging these things based on, you know, just an announcement is made and they automatically say, oh, it's going to be crap because it's sci-fi. What they're ignoring is that even during this relatively darker run of sci-fi, I guess you could say, where it hasn't been as science fiction oriented in this way, we still had shows like Eureka, Warehouse 13, at least, you know, a good portion of, Being Human US, Alphas for that matter. You know, there's still been shows that have been on, I mean, even Continuum rerunning on sci-fi. You've had plenty of good shows that have been on the network since, you know, Battlestar Galactica ran. Everyone is like, oh, when that went off the air, that was it for the network. No, it wasn't. It may have been it in terms of that type of speculative fiction, but it wasn't the end of good product out of the network. And now that they're turning their eye back towards more traditional science fiction and things that have a proven track record, at least on the literary side of things, it's not saying that the adaptation is going to be perfect. I mean, let's face it, Ascension, they kind of swung and took a miss, but they took the swing. Yeah. That's what's important.
Yeah, and it also just annoys me when people start criticizing stuff just based on a trailer. I mean, this is one of the reasons why I don't deal with the previews. I rarely deal with trailers. The trailer is what they're putting out because some advertising or PR guy thinks this is what people want to see to drag them in, and it may have absolutely nothing to do with what's actually wound up on screen. They've just taken the snippets that they think are going to get the best reaction, even if people are jumping all over it, but which would seem to belie their intent. Wait until we see the actual product, because you really can hardly ever tell from whatever the promo material is nowadays.
Oh, just look at the reaction to the teaser trailer for the Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
The negativity that came from that was just mind-boggling. There's literally nothing in there to tell you anything of substance, and yet people were just going off the wall with it. And some of them, I mean, just, sorry, Gary, but going to the irrational J.J. Abrams hatred, when it's like there's nothing there that you can hang your hat on. And yet it's like, oh, look, he ruined it. It's ruined what? You didn't see anything. you get more out of Star Wars Rebels for the new continuity right now than you did out of that trailer. Come on. Anyway, we'll get into stuff like that later, I'm sure. But we have one more news article. Maybe lighten things up a little bit here, Edmund.
Absolutely. also at the TCA press tour, Stars was telling people a little bit about their upcoming series, Ash vs. Evil Dead. Of course, coming from the longtime team of Sam Raimi and Rob Tappert, and with, of course, Bruce Campbell on board as both star and executive producer, they were announcing that it will apparently be half-hour episodes, not hour-long episodes. But even though that may have taken some people aback, they were saying that it's going to be a chock-full half-hour, and I think I'm kind of okay with that. If it's, basically Ash just getting to go full-on for half an hour and you don't have to sustain things for too long, I think that could work rather well. Also some amusing stuff that, as of course this team has done with Spartacus and Hercules and Xena, they are shooting in New Zealand, which means they're having to import cars with the steering wheel on the left-hand side, and bring in some American signs, since they are not changing the location. He is still in classic small-town America, so certainly given the track record and given the people involved and the property they're dealing with, I'm still more than expecting this to be a heck of a lot of fun.
And we thought that the continuation of Twin Peaks was well after the original run. How far back is Army of Darkness? Mid-80s, right? So
I was going to say, I run out of fingers, it's hard to say.
Yeah. Only five, because, Chainsaw. But anyhow, I'm thinking that a half hour is actually perfect. Get in, have your fun, get out.
Yeah.
Even if it is kind of somewhat serialized, at least it's not overstaying its welcome. I mean, we'll see, but... I believe that the people that are behind this know exactly what kind of property that they are resurrecting, and they know what they're doing.
Yeah, and of course it should be pointed out that yes, this is a Starz Cable half hour, so it's still like two-thirds of a regular network hour.
So. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not a 22-minute thing like we're used to from a half hour on a main network,
yes.
At least as far as we know now. So. That's it for the news this week. There was quite a lot of it, and in fact, I left out a few things here and there. I mean, there were some announcements about premieres, but, in some cases, the second season of Black Sails is literally in a couple of weeks. I don't think we need to really talk about that one. But there was, other casting news that I just didn't think was quite as high profile, but wow, there was a lot of news that came out, and a lot of genre-related news. Just once again, reinforcing the fact that now is a really good time for fans of genre TV. There's a lot out there, and a lot more coming, and the ever-expanding list of cable networks really throwing their hat into the ring. I mean, MTV? I know they did Teen Wolf. Don't get me wrong, and I know there are people who are fans of that, but MTV's Shannara. It's worth a look, just to see what they pull off. I'll say that. Any last thoughts on any of this, Gary?
Once again, I want to applaud Sci-Fi for following through with what they said was going to be a major change, that they were going to start trying to do real science fiction. And so I'm glad for that. I hope they really do carve out a little bit of a better corner of viewership with that. It's really lacking, I feel, out of all the hundreds of cable channels that currently exist, as well as the eventual move to just pure internet at some point, where I think your core audiences are going to become even more important to you, because they're going to be able to go right to that and watch you. There's not going to be any channel changing to view you, so it's important to really carve out your niche audience as soon as possible.
Yeah, Edmund, how about you?
Yeah, on a similar vein, I just want to applaud CW for with that slew of announcements. It does seem to indicate that they are fully embracing their new role as one of the main networks for genre television and the stuff we like to watch. At the same time, when you think about some of the stuff that they've done in past years, the Ringer debacle, it's what immediately came to mind. But the fact that they're certainly there were some renewals there that were no-brainers, but others, like the 100, and like embracing the Jane the Virgin, is a sign that that they're willing to keep something around because it's getting them the critical buzz since they're getting the ratings hits elsewhere. I think that's a really good sign, and certainly for a network that I know I've probably been the one most guilty on this podcast of talking about them as a network that I thought of as that place where there's all those teen dramas. They have certainly moved way beyond that now.
Yeah, if anything, it's amazing to see that Fox, once the bastion of taking chances with genre material, has ceded that to the CW in a major way. And really, in a way, Gary, I mean, sci-fi ceded that to the CW. Because all these shows would have once upon a time been, you know, solid contenders for a sci-fi Friday night. And no, not anymore. So we'll see.
Well, I think that's what – I think sci-fi is smart. You know, they're realizing that there's a lot of things that they can't compete with anymore because these larger networks or, you know, people with deeper pockets and stuff like that can do some of these shows. So their thought to try and specialize themselves, I don't think is a bad move.
No, and especially when we talk about, I mean, you've said it many times. I think you're actually the champion of this idea in many ways. This, you know, hey, do 6 or 8 episodes or 10 or whatever and get out. Make it a solid season versus trying to stretch it out if you don't have to. Calling it a 6-hour miniseries versus a 6-episode season, what I don't see a big difference. It's the same thing for me. It's really adapting the length of the content to the needs of the content and not pushing it too far and really making it that special event. You know, like, why is Sherlock such a big deal when it comes? It's not just the quality of the show. It's that it's 6 hours and that's it. And so it grabs your attention. And I think sci-fi is trying to get back to that credibility of when they did some of those really big miniseries of you know, a decade ago, when those were events. Those were things that were widely anticipated and widely advertised. I remember when Children of Dune was going to premiere, and there were promotions for that everywhere. I think the promotions did far more than the material at times to generate buzz. But at any rate, it was still, that was what the channel was known for. And it's good to see them get back to that again.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time. Watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.